It's been a slow day.
So let's talk about the so let's talk about the big issue. Are you Yanny or Laurel?
Yanny.
Yanny, okay.
I heard
good.
Yanny yesterday for the first time. And then as it has been played, there have been times where my head is, you know, cocked to the side because I'm like, that
almost sounded
Laurel.
Like Laurel.
And then
yeah.
as you start to hear it more, you can pick up if you're, I don't, maybe I'm trying too hard, but like you can pick up the, like the low kind of robotic Laurel that's
right.
coming out versus the kind of higher pitched whining Yanny.
but it's Yanny, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah. Okay, now we've got that resolved. Let's talk about the. Let's start by talking about the walkout and the rally today in Raleigh. I know we've had Kelly Fahey, WCHL reporter, there today, and we'll hear some of the interviews that he did. I know you spoke with Greg Meyer, State House Representative, about that and the short session. But what has gone down in Raleigh today?
So it all started very early this morning. With buses of teachers and mainly teachers, obviously being, but you know, other support staff from schools, community supporters that are there, a wide range of people, a lot of young people down there today as well. I've got some friends who are teachers that I know are down there today as well. That are the numbers just continued to grow every time we saw a new estimate. First we were earlier, you know, in the week, and then in the last week we were thinking 10,000 was kind of what we were hearing from the North Carolina Association of Educators who was organizing, and then it got to 15, and then today's numbers. It's kind of at the point where if you could throw out about any large number and people would probably catch on to it. But they're saying, you know, 20 to 25,000 in some cases. It's just, in my opinion, the optics of it are probably more impactful at this point than any official number that's placed on it. Because it's one of those things that is not only going to be seen across North Carolina at this point, but it's very similar to what we've seen in some of the pictures and things of Arizona and West Virginia and Oklahoma, where it is just a massive blanket of red going out in a downtown location. So you've got just a street in Raleigh that is just covered in red shirts and you know, people holding signs and trying to work their way into the General Assembly, the physical building. And I think that's interesting because it's a good test for the new security measures that they put in place, the metal detectors and things, and trying to figure out ways to efficiently get people into that space. They filled up the galleries at the House and Senate sessions that were actually started today. There was a lot of chanting going on from the people that were not able to get into the galleries, actually, but were outside and started to disrupt the sessions that were going on a little bit. There were a couple, at least one House member, I remember, that asked the speaker to take some sort of action in trying to quiet the outside noise a little bit, but no action was taken. I think that would have been latched onto if it would have been today. So it's been a long day so far, and it is not slowing down. They've got a rally. This has all been, you know, kind of leading up to the rally that's happening at 3:30, where they're going to have a lot of speakers. Governor Cooper is scheduled to address the crowd out there again today as well. I know Representative Greg Meyer has been out, State Senator Valerie Fouché talking about the local people. These are ones that I've seen through pictures on social media, out with the crowd, addressing the crowd in some form or fashion, and we'll see if there's any type of movement. We had the Republican legislative leaders, and again, they have supermajorities in both chambers at this point, so if anything is going to happen, they are going to have to be the ones to get on board with this. And yesterday, they came out and announced some teacher pay raises that they were, you know, kind of pledging for the upcoming short legislative session, where they've already put a number on how much they're going to spend. It's just allocating that much money at this point. One of the interesting things that has happened with this is the focus on teacher pay, certainly, but beyond teacher pay and just education funding in general.
Yeah, speaking with Blake Hodge, and really the proposals that have been released, or the proposals that are being suggested by Republican lawmakers right now, are not the first ones. I mean, we've been having this conversation for quite a few years now, and I think it really kind of is worth emphasizing the extent to which these protests have been going on, and they have been to some degree successful. This isn't tens of thousands of teachers massing in Raleigh and having these demonstrations and not being heard. They have actually been able to move the dial in the General Assembly in a way that would not have been the case had the demonstrations not happened. It's just a lot further that still needs to go.
Yeah, right? It's just the pace at which things are being done, which seems to be the concern. And, you know, Republican legislative leaders have said they've addressed pay as best as they can, they believe, over the past few years in giving raises and targeting different areas of teachers in terms of new teachers initially and then some of the veteran teachers, and now trying to get everybody's band up whenever you're talking about just teacher pay. So they are relying on that and saying, you know, we've still got to save some money and be able to put some in reserves for the state in general to be able to continue to function, and then addressing teacher pay in ways that it can be. I think as this has evolved and been discussed more, we've seen a lot more of the focus from talking about in terms of kind of buzzwords, from teacher pay to per pupil funding and where the state is in that regard. And that's where it gets a bit complicated, because everybody's got there are so many numbers being thrown around.
Right,
where does the state rank in teacher pay? And are you talking about average teacher pay? Are you talking about how is that affecting people in Chapel Carbonell City Schools versus people in Stokes County? You've got
how
local
does teacher
supplements
pay today compared to 2008 if you adjust for inflation.
And how does your per pupil funding relate to 2007, 2008,
and when we're
and
ranking
today.
North Carolina against the other 49 states plus the District of Columbia, and we're going up on those rankings, is that a good thing for North Carolina, or does that just mean the entire country is not respecting education the way that it should?
And North Carolina is the 10th most populous state in the country.
Yeah.
That's just that's the way it is. And, you know, as numbers are getting thrown around, there's nothing that says any North Carolina, even in the most favorable of numbers, if you're looking at it from what the Republicans have touted in terms of the progress that has been made, you know, you're still mid-30s on kind of the best end of any of these calculations and spectrums, other than trying to say, like, in the past year-over-year growth, it's higher on the spectrum of that.
And it's also a question of priorities, too. I mean, you've got lawmakers in the General Assembly, and I've mentioned, like, the dial has moved in the last couple of years. You've got Republican lawmakers that are paying more attention to teachers than they otherwise would, but it has taken a mass movement like this in order to move the dial that way, in order to get lawmakers to actually pay attention to the plight of teachers and the plight of public school funding. And even now they're saying, well, we've done this already. We've taken steps. We have addressed, and the problems still persist across the state. And you mentioned, and we had Brian Link and Sally Merriman on yesterday from Chapel Hill Carbonell City Schools, that the state of things in Chapel Hill Carbonell and in Orange County schools is still pretty dire as far as per pupil funding and as far as teacher pay goes. You've still got teachers digging into their own pockets to pay for school supplies. You've still got teachers working second jobs. And here in Orange County, the situation is way, way better than in most other districts across the state, because we've got a board of county commissioners and a county government that is that A, is committed to providing additional funding, and B, has the means to do so. Most other counties, either one or the other is lacking, so the situation's worse.
Yeah, and it's kind of relative in some cases as well, because you're talking about the additional supplements that are provided by the districts, but it also is an expensive place to live. We talk about this all the time.
That's another number to throw in, just for the cost of living. And
how you can't do one thing without it affecting something else is something that we just continue to see and learn on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. And that was one thing that Greg Meyer was hoping to address with a local bill that was filed today along with some Durham representatives, which would allow Durham Public Schools to go into to purchase some property not intended for housing a future school, which kind of is typically the only way a school board can purchase property. But to purchase property and then set up a public-private partnership, perhaps, or of some way to subsidize affordable housing rental units for teachers, you know, and you're kind of targeting young teachers in doing this and trying to give them affordable options, as you know you're coming in to a salary that can be difficult to work in some of the more populous areas. And they're not the first people to try to get this done in Durham. Asheville has taken a lot of specific steps to address things like this.
We'll have the conversation with Greg Meyer coming up later on today. I'm kind of looking askance at that. I'll hear more from Representative Meyer later on, because I haven't heard the conversation yet. I will later, because I don't feel like that should be the school district's job to be providing housing. But at the same time, like, again, that reinforces just how significantly dire a situation this is for teachers in, I mean, in the case of Durham. Again, you've got a fairly vibrant economy in Durham, and a lot more means to cover funding for public schools and pay for teachers and supplemental funding on the county level than you have at most other counties in the state. And even there, you've got a situation like that.
Yeah. So there's still, as part of this conversation, I don't want, you know, certainly want people to stay tuned and listen in, because he had a lot of interesting things. And
yeah, no spoilers.
I think the thing to continue to watch will be, the Republicans have said clearly so far they would like this to be a legitimately short session, which we have not had in North Carolina in a long time. But they want to be done by late June, get everybody out, fully done by the 4th of July. It would be really difficult, it seems, to be able to incorporate a lot of changes to things whenever your main project here is the budget during these next few weeks, to incorporate a lot of the changes that are being asked for before July 4th.
Right. I mean, and the teachers are saying that too.
Yeah,
I mean, most of the teachers that are out there today and the ones that we've spoken to have said this has more to do with November than June 23rd.
And that's the thing, is if you get past the July 4th, and I'm using that as the arbitrary end date for the short session, if you get past that time, everyone's attention, everyone's money from outside organizations or local, you know, people just donate, everything is going to turn to November at that point.
Yeah.
So we've already got a heightened interest in the 2018 election, you know, nationally with the midterm elections, but in North Carolina specifically because of everything that's been going on and just the political status of the state. So it'll be really interesting to see what, if any, movement beyond what has already been pledged in terms of teacher pay raises is done to in an attempt to maybe buffer some of that on the Republican side of things heading into the fall.
So we'll keep following that on the state level. That rally is happening today. Let's talk about the thing that happened yesterday at the county level, which is county commissioners voting to approve the change to the ordinance governing flags.
Correct. This has been a lot of people are talking about this and saying this came after the Confederate flag was raised just outside Hillsboro on Highway 70. That's not technically true. It was in discussion before that, and the county commissioners had started making some progress on this earlier this year, but certainly started after the rumors that that flag was going up.
Right, so you had ACT BAC saying they were going to do it, then county commissioners started talking about it, then ACT BAC did it, now the county commissioners voted.
So, you know,
it's the timeline there.
It's been a months-long discussion that we've been having with Chair of the Commissioners Mark Dorson on this program and covering other county commissioner meetings. But last night was kind of the night on this, and it was late April whenever that flag went up on Highway 70. And now the county commissioners, after about an hour of public comment last night, did ultimately take a vote. We knew it was a possibility. They did go ahead and vote last night. Mark Dorson was absent, but they voted unanimously 6-0 to adopt the new flag size, flag pole height, and setback restrictions. So basically what that means
and is number of flagpoles too, right?
Right. So what that means is in a residential zoned area, you can have one flagpole. It can be 24 feet high. It can have three flags on it, but they cannot be more than 24 square feet. If you live in a non-residentially zoned area, it can be taller. It can be 54 feet, I believe it is. 96 square feet, you can put 3 flagpoles, but it sounds like you can only have 1 flag on each pole.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to be 20 feet from the property line. So you cannot put it, you know, directly
like right next to right your next neighbors. To,
yeah, and there's some concern expressed with that of if you've got a 70-foot flagpole 10
right,
feet from
right.
the line, it could fall on somebody else's property and land and all that other stuff. So the adoption or the amendment to the UDO has been
if you got a 70-foot flagpole 60 feet from the property line,
yeah,
it can
right,
still fall
exactly.
onto someone else's property. But, yeah.
but most of it'll be
most
on
of
you.
It'll be in yours. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The issue there is the minimum lot size, I believe it was, is 50 feet in Orange County. So if you had a 50-foot setback and you had a 50-foot lot, you physically can't put a
right,
flagpole
right.
no matter what. So they made some adjustments
concern,
to
yeah,
that
yeah.
To make it 20 feet. So that was adopted last night, 6-0. There was split public comment among the more than 20 people who spoke at the county commissioner's meeting. If you go to put a flag up today, that those are the rules that you live by.
Mm-hmm.
The flag that is on Highway 70, along Highway 70, if you drive by it today, it's still going to be there.
Yeah.
It has 1 year to come into compliance with the flag size.
Yeah. Any flag that is already up has a
correct.
Year to come
correct.
Into compliance.
I'm just saying,
right,
yeah, people right. are, if you're driving by hoping to not see that one today, it's still going to be
still
there.
It's still there, yeah.
It's got a year to come into compliance with the flag size. Interestingly enough, the flag pole can stay there. It's grandfathered in until it is damaged or something, and if you put a new one up, it has to comply.
So it can just be
it.
A really tall flagpole with a dinky little flag up on top?
It could.
Is that basically?
It could.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think that we'll see how long it takes for the flag to come down. That certainly will be an interesting exchange 1 year from
one
now.
1 year from now. Because what is the sanction for not being in compliance?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Or
what is the enforcement mechanism? Because, I mean, we've been talking about this in the context
yeah.
of civil disobedience. I mean,
right.
if ACBAC wanted to disobey the law and
yeah.
accept the consequence for doing that,
and
then that
point,
becomes the that
yeah,
becomes
you can't
the issue.
Get a permit to put a new one up, but if you just wanted to do it in that same kind of vein, I presume that physically you could just do it. But anyway, I'll have to look up some more information, to be honest with you, about what actually happens at that point in terms of penalty or anything else. But it's the same kind of noise violation or anything else, I would imagine, in terms of a citation and being forced to come into compliance before any types of kind of criminal
right.
things could be pursued.
I don't think this wouldn't be a criminal thing.
No, right. Like if you repeatedly
yeah, yeah.
break a noise ordinance, I
right,
assume that
right.
there's something that you could
mm-hmm.
be charged with. But it's the ordinance is in effect as of the vote on Tuesday night, and we'll continue to follow this. And of course, a lot of people made the connection between that and Silent Sam on the UNC property, but there's no sort of actual tangible
right.
connection to what was done last night with being able to do anything in terms of other symbols.
All right. Blake Hodge, thank you so much.